the studios of KUSP FM in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. My guest is Adam Goldman, who, along with Matt Apuzzo, shared the 2012 Pulitzer Prize for Investigative Reporting for their reporting on NYPD's clandestine spying programs targeting Muslims. Their book is called Enemies Within, Inside the NYPD's Secret Spying Unit and Bin Laden's Final Plot Against America. Adam Goldman, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Thanks for having me.
So the attacks of September 11, 2001 resulted in a kind of a mad scramble to close the barn door after the horse had already gone. The NYPD engaged in a lot of activities that were designed to prevent another attack. So were any of those activities illegal?
Well, that right now that's being put before two federal judges. So we don't come down on whether it's legal or not. We're journalists, we're not prosecutors. But we certainly raised a lot of questions, and now the judges are going to answer them.
Well, what are some of the questions then?
Well, the NYPD is operating under a consent decree, and as part of that consent decree, they are not allowed to monitor First Amendment activity, political speech, religious activity, unless there's an actual criminal predicate. And it's not so clear that that they were operating with a sufficient predicate. The other case involves an ACLU lawsuit in which Muslims have accused the NYPD of violating the 14th Amendment, the Equal Protection Clause, that they were unfairly targeted because, in fact, they were Muslim.
Well, so what did the NYPD, what were they doing exactly?
Well, after 9/11, the NYPD said we can't depend on the federal government any longer, and we need to build our own counterterrorism programs in New York City. And they turned to an individual who had been the top spy at the CIA, and they put him in charge of this intelligence division at the NYPD. And he managed to get the consent decree, the guidelines that had regulated, essentially, the NYPD, got them diluted. And he told this federal judge, because the NYPD had a long history of spying on political activists, anti-war activists, that, we need to operate under new rules. And the rules were that they needed evidence of a crime before launching an investigation. But they told the judge, look, we can't wait for evidence of a crime because that's 9/11. We need to act before that. We need the possibility of a crime. And in this post-9/11 environment, it seemed like this guy was going to fall. We had Al-Qaeda in the United States. The judge agreed to it. So Dave Cohen, working with another individual named Larry Sanchez, who was actually on loan from the CIA, he was a CIA officer, they came up with these particular programs to, in many ways, monitor the Muslim community in New York. They looked at the boroughs of Brooklyn and Queens, and they saw foreigners. They saw people who spoke a different language. They saw communities in which there were signs that had Arabic, and there were restaurants that served halal.
Wait a minute. You're saying they found people in New York City that were foreigners that spoke a different language?
I know, which is incredible because, New York is the immigrant experience, right?
Right.
It is the singular immigrant experience. But they looked out at that, and it scared the hell out of them. And this isn't a small population. These are first and second generation Muslim Americans. I mean, many of these are Americans. And, today, they estimate the Muslim American, Native American population is close to 700,000 or 800,000 people in New York. So they said, we need to know what's going on in these communities to prevent terrorism.
Well, now your book, Enemies Within, Inside the NYPD's Secret Spying Unit and Bin Laden's Final Plot Against America, focuses on one particular terrorist.
That's right.
Or a potential terrorist. Is he a terrorist?
He's a terrorist, yes. He pleaded guilty. There's no allegedly. He's an actual terrorist.
Okay.
So we wrote this book based on, you know, hundreds and hundreds of secret NYPD documents that were leaked to us, and that's what we won the Pulitzer on. And more were leaked to us later, and those helped us form the book. So what the documents allowed us to do is look at, well, where they were and what they knew, right?
Yes.
And they were all over this individual, this terrorist named Najib Boulazizi, who was from Flushing, Queens. They were in his mosque. They were in his Muslim Student Association. They had been to his travel agency. They were in the restaurants down the street from him. And it was interesting because this was the most serious plot since 9/11. This is a real deal Al-Qaeda plot where guys from America with U.S. passports went to Pakistan, trained, came back to blow up the subways. And when we were looking at these documents, it raised an interesting question. Wait a minute. Ray Kelly and the NYPD said, well, we're going to create all these programs. We're going to spend all this money to catch these guys. And they didn't. They missed them completely. So the book, we wrote the book as a thriller. And the book tells the story of Najib Boulazizi and his two co-conspirators and the race by the federal government to catch these guys. And it's ironic because, well, Ray Kelly said, look, we need these programs. We have to go where the federal government's going to go. We're not going to go. We can't depend on the federal government alone. It's ironic because at the end, it was, in fact, the federal government that caught these guys and not the NYPD.
So the NYPD did everything they could, but yet they failed.
And as you know, there's a fundamental question here. When the federal government fails, what do, right?
Right.
Well, we raise hell, right? Congress raises hell. How did this happen? Who made the mistakes? The blame game starts. Whose heads are we going to chop off? I mean, and it was interesting because in this particular case, nobody asked that question of the NYPD. Wait a minute. Where did you guys fall down? So, Matt and I thought it was an interesting opportunity to sort of look at what programs worked and what programs didn't work, in a sort of high stakes drama, where the reader can sit down and says, "Wait, well, why are we doing these things if they don't work?"
And the book is good. It's got lots of exciting scenes, and one of the things that ties into what we're talking about here is you got a guy driving across the bridge. I can't remember what bridge, or is it the Lincoln Tunnel or whatever?
No, it's the George Washington Bridge.
Yeah, and he's got a bomb in his car, and the police stop him, right?
Yeah, the Port Authority, which is in charge of the bridges and going to New York City, the Port Authority, the FBI, the Joint Terrorism Task Force, the Port Authority is on the task force, and the Port Authority said, well, we'll stop it, right? We're going to check these guys out on the bridge, and... They screwed up. The officer they sent didn't have security clearances, so he couldn't be told what he was looking for. And the dog they used wasn't trained to sniff out the particular explosive that was on the car. So what people at the time when this made headlines in September of 2009, what people didn't get was, hey, a bomb got in the New York City. An actual bomb got in New York City in 2009.
Even though they were there, even though they stopped the guy. So they stopped him and then they just let him go?
Well, they did they were using secret warrants that we've been talking about under FISA, this whole debate with the NSA and Snowden. And these warrants are secret, they're classified, and they needed a reason to stop him. So it looked like, not that it was based on the FISA warrants, which were based on the secret program called PRISM that the NSA was monitoring these emails. They needed to appear as a drug interdiction, right? They had the authority to pull people over on the bridges, but when the drug dog went around the car, it didn't sniff out the bomb, so there was no probable cause to look through the car or reasonably detain him. Because remember, this isn't Pakistan. I mean, they're thinking about building a criminal case against this guy, right? So you gotta have a reason for stopping him and a reason for detaining him. But since the dog and the officer never spotted it, he went on his way. Later, but I'm not gonna give it away. The ending.
Let's just say he
gets into New York City with a bomb, and it also illustrates what we also attempted to do in a sort of compelling way. It's illustrative, like you have a lot of smart people making a lot of decisions, and mistakes still get made, right?
Right. Yeah, we're talking with Adam Goldman, and his new book is called Enemies Within, Inside the NYPD's Secret Spying Unit and Bin Laden's Final Plot Against America, written with his partner, Matt Apuzzo. Well, now, I'm not asking you the name of the person that leaked the documents to you, but who leaked the documents to you in terms of where was this person, what was their position that they could leak them to you?
Well, we have written, I mean, the genesis of this book dates back to August 2011, where Matt and I, where we cover national security in D.C., we decided to, we were hearing things about the NYPD, the secretive unit called the Demographics Unit, where they sent out plainclothes officers, and they literally rake they map the human terrain of New York City. They map the Muslim community. And they were called rakers. They were looking for hotspots. And the idea is that if you raked hard enough, you would find, you know, hot coals, right? And these embers. And the embers would be radicalization, where Muslim Americans, where Muslims were going down the wrong path toward, you know, violent jihad. And we wrote about this demographics unit and the rakers, and they employed under informants called mosque crawlers. They sent into the mosque, and the NYPD denied it. This is all fiction. And they said that on the record to us. And then people started leaking us documents, showing their internal secret documents, showing that this was in fact true. What we knew to be true, they actually gave us the documentation. So we wrote stories about it. It wasn't just one person; it was several people within the NYPD who leaked us these documents.
So these rakers who were looking for Muslim activity, not Muslim activity, but terrorist activity, right?
Right.
And one of the places that they found apparently must have been a hotbed of it, because they kept going back again and again and again, were the best restaurants.
Right. There were a couple of places. One was Kabul Kebab. It was in Flushing, Queens, and it was excellent kebabs. And, you know, what the head of the unit, the demographics unit, found, and he spoke to us on the record for the book, is that he found one of his officers going back there and writing up reports about, you know, activity at this, you know, writing up reports on this particular restaurant. But he started to question why he kept going back there, and eventually the sergeant who ran the unit, the lieutenant who ran the unit, figured out, wait a minute, you're not going back there because of any suspicious activity. You just like the kebabs. And then there was another one called the Damascus Bakery in Brooklyn, and he wondered why the officer was spending, you know, so much money on sweets at, you know, 4 p.m. It's funny. I lived in New York for 5 years. I lived right down the street from this bakery. I used to go on there. You get a pastry for a buck, right?
Yeah.
And you know, these guys aren't dumb. The lieutenant was like, wait a minute, how's he spending $40 on pastries?
Buying it for the entire
family, right? taking home.
Leave the terrorist, but take the cannoli.
Right, and this is, you know, it's funny, but what we try to illustrate is like, and this isn't just true to the NYPD. I think it's true to the government as well, the federal government, is that people develop these programs and they're reluctant to let them go, right? Even when they're ineffective. And this was one program, because nobody wants to let these things go, even if there's a remote chance of catching somebody. But you know, in this particular instance, you know, it was completely ineffective.
Okay, so they maybe didn't catch Zazi, the guy that you were writing about in your book, but did they catch anybody? Did they stop anything?
Yeah, they've had a couple of they've had a couple of successes, and we write about one in the book, about a young disgruntled Pakistani who was at a bookstore and had sort of grand aspirations of doing something bad, and you know, they mount this investigation, and it takes, you know, a year and $100,000 to finally admit that this guy, finally get this guy to say what was needed to be said. Yeah, he wanted to blow up the subway tunnel, but you know, he never, not to diminish the success, but you know, he never had a bomb in his hand. They took it to federal court, and they proved that there was intent, even though he never bought the explosives. I mean, the difference with Zazi is Zazi was the real deal. Zazi actually had a bomb. Zazi wasn't some wayward idiot. I mean, so, and you know, and people misread the book. It's not to say that the NYPD hasn't what they're doing isn't of value. It's the way they go about doing it, and that's sort of gotten lost in this whole discussion. And there's no doubt what after 9/11, what Ray Kelly did was right. He needed to look at this differently. What police department wouldn't? And it's the way they went about doing it, which is alone, which pre-9/11 they would call stovepiping. That's how 9/11 happened, that the intelligence agencies weren't talking to each other, right? It's a fundamental flaw of 9/11. But that was what the NYPD decided to do. They're like, look, we're going to go out on our own, we're going to do these things, and then we'll bring it to the federal government. Because the FBI, under 12333, this presidential finding, executive order, you know, they're in charge of domestic terrorism. You know, the Justice Department prosecutes terrorists. And the problem with that is, you know, these cases are complicated, they're hard, and there can be real screw-ups when you're not collaborating as one entity.
Well, although they may... is it fair to say that maybe they prevented even more terrorism because they were there doing it?
But it was secret until we revealed it. So a deterrent, here's the problem with that logic.
Okay.
A deterrent is only effective if the other side knows it exists.
Right.
So all these programs were secret. The documents, what we revealed, it was all secret. Okay. You know, the Russia is not going to nuke us because they know we'll nuke them back.
Right.
So if the deterrent is secret, then it's not effective.
Of course, if the undercover, if the NYPD undercover secret, you know, is going and buying tons of pastries, then maybe they're not as, you know, I mean, it might be secret to us, but maybe more obvious to potential terrorists that they're there watching.
Yeah, and what we talk about in the book, and you know, the Zazi plot is that, look, you know, they were in the mosque when they decided they were going to go off to Pakistan and, you know, battle U.S. forces in Afghanistan until Al-Qaeda got their hands on them. You know, it's funny because, well, it's not funny, but they know, look, they say to each other, one another, look, we can't talk about this in the mosque, right? So what do? They step outside of the mosque and they go in their car and they say, okay, let's do this, right? They went into a place where they knew there wouldn't be prying eyes. And they know that the mosque, you know, to a certain extent, you know, it's not a place to talk about, you know, terrorist activity, right? I mean, let's just be, you know, this isn't just about, you know, we're terrorist hotspot. You know, criminals know that too, right?
Right.
I mean, if you're gonna do bad things, if you're gonna break the law, probably not the best idea to do it in church or in synagogue or in the mosque, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the mob was very effective because they didn't do it in these places, right? They did it in the basement of their mom's home, right?
Well,
in the NYPD's attempt to get their hands around this problem, you know, they made certain assumptions about the community, and the problem, at least from what we saw, is that you're treating a community as if it's an enemy. And you know, in terrorism, and certainly on the war on terrorism, they are the front lines, right? If you have a mother and father who see that their child is going down the wrong path, you know, you want those parents to reach out to law enforcement, right?
Right.
You want them to say, wait a minute, this isn't going well, I can't change his behavior, he's hanging out with a bad element. You want them to reach out. You know, what's interesting we've lost in this war on terror is that, you know, there was a point where if your son or daughter was, you know, got wrapped up in drugs, right, and was going down the wrong path, hanging around the wrong people, started doing drugs, right? You know, there might be, the priest might intervene. There might be intervention. And you know, I think a lot of people argue that that's the way we have to tackle this problem, too. But what we're seeing is that there's less appetite in the federal government and in the local NYPD. It's like, well, let's not do a disruption. Let's not let's not talk to these people and say, hey, you know what? It's a bad idea. It's a really bad idea. We know you're on the internet and you're listening to these sort of crazy clerics and they're talking about jihad. Let's not do that. Instead, like, they're letting this thing play out, right? They're letting it play out until his views have hardened and he's willing to, you know, and he gets some crazy idea about going overseas to fight, you know, to do terrorism or here. But this is a, you know, it's a problem the federal government's trying to battle. But you have federal agencies, law enforcement agencies who are like, well, that's not really our issue. We want to make cases, right? How do you get ahead as an FBI agent or an NYPD officer? You make cases, right? You make arrests, right? So we're a little less tolerant.
Well, could some argue that your book, by prying into the, you know, and exposing the faults, foibles of the NYPD, giving aid and comfort to the enemy by exposing this?
Or you could take the other position, which is maybe we've demonstrated a lot of these programs don't work and they're costing the taxpayers a lot of money. And taxpayers can't make a decision about works or what doesn't work unless they know, right? I mean, you can make the same argument about Edward Snowden and what's going on with the NSA. I think, you know, now there's been an airing of what the government has been doing since the Patriot Act was passed. And you know what? Not all of it looks like it's working, right? And we've given up a lot of freedoms. We've given up a lot of freedoms on trust. And you know, you could argue as American, that's un-American, right? I mean, we as Americans, what we founded this country on wasn't blind trust of the government, right?
Yes, correct. I'm just letting you tell me. Adam Goldman, tell me a little bit about the process that you and your partner, Matt Apuzzo, how do you write together? How do two people write something?
Well, Matt and I, we worked very, very closely, and I mean, it's a natural relationship. When we were writing the stories, we knew what we needed, who we needed to go after. We knew what we needed to nail down to do the stories. You know, we would alternate stories. I would start writing one, Matt would start writing one. The book was similar. We divvied up chapters, and I would tackle a chapter, Matt would tackle a chapter. You know, it might be based on expertise. Matt is really good on national security law. He really knows national security law. And, you know, I might know more about the history of Najib Bouazizi and the other guys in Chapter 4, the accidental tourist, or the case involving Brian Neal-Vinnis, another guy who went off to Pakistan. And then we just flip. We just trade chapters and, you know, fill in the gaps one might have missed. But you would think it would be difficult, but it wasn't. It was a pretty, pretty easy process. And I think, you know, we both held each other to a very high standard. You know, if somebody told us something, you know, that wasn't good enough. You know, even though, you know, one of the great things about the book is we got a lot of people on the record, right? I mean, you read the book, there's not a whole lot of anonymous sources. It's not a typical Washington, D.C. book. And we really, really, really push people to talk, you know, to be in their own voice and talk on the record because we thought it was important. And we went to great lengths to endnote the book. And we actually put them on up on Simon & Schuster's website, enemieswithin.book, because unlike the government and unlike the NYPD, we wanted to be completely transparent. So you can go to the website, enemieswithinbook.com, and you can look at the documents we used to write the book, and you can say, wait a minute, yeah, I see what they're writing, and that rings true. I mean, so it was important to us to be transparent and get people on the record.
Were you surprised that authorities, rather than saying no comment, that they actually denied the existence of things that you knew to be true?
True. Yeah, yeah, it was sort of a really silly response. It's always the worst possible tactic to take for journalists, right? Because if you tell us, if you are not truthful with us, then we think there's smoke there, right? Or there's not just smoke, there's fire. And it only causes us to dig in and try to get to the story. It was a weird response, because usually in D.C., even when you're dealing with other, you know, law enforcement or intelligence, the intelligence community here, you know, either they're going to deny comment or they're going to engage you, right? Maybe there's something they want to mitigate. Maybe they don't want this particular thing out. They typically want to know what you know. So if there is an issue, then they can deal with it. But, you know, lying is just the worst possible, is just the worst possible response.
Well, hey, congratulations on winning the Pulitzer Prize. What was that like? Who called? Did somebody call you in the morning and say you won? Well, how do you find out? Do they have like an Oscar dinner and they have the nominees and they read the winner? How does it go?
Well, they read the winners out the day Columbia University announces them, and you know, it was pretty, you know, it was exciting. And you try not to get wrapped up in prizes as a reporter, and we never even, I mean, when we were doing this series, and we wrote a lot of stories, and you can go and look at the work, but it never dawned at us we were heading down that direction. We were just sort of caught up in the documents that were being released to us, and you know, and then sort of, you know, you win a prize, you win another, and suddenly it's like, oh, you got some traction, and then, you know, you win the Pulitzer. But it was, you know, it was a great moment. And I mean, it's important. I think the lesson I learned from all of this is, you know, we're journalists. You don't write for prizes, right? You don't write for prizes. You write for more important reasons. You write to hold the government accountable, and you write to help people. And at the end of the day, if, you know, your contemporaries or peers want to acknowledge your work, that's, you know, it's just a bonus.
Well, congratulations. And it's an exciting book, and I've tried to talk about it without giving it all away. The book is called Enemies Within, Inside the NYPD's Secret Spying Unit and Bin Laden's Final Plot Against America. It was written by Matt Apuzzo and my guest, Adam Goldman. Adam Goldman, thank you so much for spending some time on From the Bookshelf.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time to talk with me.
Well, that's it for this week's From the Bookshelf. I hope you had a good time, and we'll come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at fromthebookshelf.com. You can find us on Facebook, and you can subscribe to our podcast at iTunes. I want to thank my guest, Adam Goldman. His book, co-written with Matt Apuzzo, is called Enemies Within, Inside the NYPD's Secret Spying Unit and Bin Laden's Final Plot Against America. From the Bookshelf is produced by Francis Venegas. I'm Gary Shapiro. Thanks for listening. See you next time.